Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Everybody, welcome to the session. I'm your host, Justin Crosley, back in the studio today. We got a lot of shows coming at you recently, and I'm stoked about that. Today's no different. I have Oak Park Brewing in the studio with me. We're going to meet them in just a second. I've already had some of their beer. It's fantastic, so I'm looking forward to this show. I want to thank our sponsor, More Beer. You can go to morebeer.com right now and check them out. They've been our sponsor since day zero. You know that. They're still here. So go to morebeer.com, check them out. Check out their YouTube channel, too. They give away a bunch of stuff on there. I think they're still doing Free Beer Friday. All kinds of good things happening over at More Beer. So thank them for supporting this show. I thank them every time I see them. Thanks to all of our other sponsors as well. Williams Brewing, 21st Amendment, Beersmith, you name it, they're here, and we're here because of them, so we want to thank them. All right, without further ado, let's meet our guests today. We've got Raj Little and Jeff Scott from Oak Park Brewing. Welcome to the studio, guys.
What's up?
Hey, what's up?
All the way from Sacramento, California. I'm glad you guys made the trip down. It's not too far, but Bay Area traffic can be horrendous, so I still appreciate it. And I also appreciate this. And my listeners, if you haven't heard me say it recently, I'm telling you again. Sometimes we catch shit about how many West Coast brewers I have on. But I have to admit, I'm so fed up with Zoom after the couple years of Zoom that I just kind of refuse almost at all costs to do Zoom shows now. So when I have brewers who are willing to come to the studio, for me, that just takes priority over everything. So so folks at home, don't worry. I will still get outside of the West Coast, and I have been doing so when I can. In fact, we just had a brewer from Vancouver who flew down just to do the show, which I thought was pretty cool. So thank you for being in the studio and allowing me to not have to Zoom show anymore.
Well, thank you for having us.
Likewise.
I can't be the only one who's tired of Zoom, right? Like, I feel like it has done its job, and I'm thankful for it, and it still has a place. But overall, it's kind of nice to see faces, in, like, as faces, you know, not as screens.
Definitely. So, definitely.
Yeah, I agree. Between Teams and Zoom and FaceTime,
yeah,
still talk in person.
It's great for productivity. So I'm not trying, like I said, it has a place, but I'm so glad to have, like, people in the studio again. So thanks for being here and doing that. I like to start sometimes with a beer that's not my guest beer. So I gave you guys, I gave us all Faction Beer today, who's celebrating their 10th anniversary this month. And we're drinking their Helles Strata. Have you guys had a chance to sip it yet?
Here we go.
It's a Helles with, I'm guessing, 100% Strata. I didn't look it up. I probably should have. It's definitely like predominantly Strata. You can taste it, right?
Yes, it is pretty heavy on the Strata.
Yeah, yeah.
It's tasty. Congratulations, Factions, to 10 years in the business.
Yeah.
That's a long time, and it's impressive. So good job, guys.
They're some of my favorites, so we're actually throwing them. They're having their own anniversary party, and then we're throwing a party here, too.
Cool,
because they're
cool.
Just great people who make great beer.
They are. And I got to say, they probably have one of the best views in all tap rooms. On the West Coast, at least.
That's, I've been to. Yeah. That's what he's been telling me, so I can't wait to make a company trip.
To finally make it there?
Yeah. Down to Faction. We got to go down to Faction.
What's funny about that, too, is not only is it this amazing view, but it's most likely, I mean, never say never, but it's this amazing view that will probably never go away because it's all this weird government land, and so no one's allowed to build in front of them. So you're just looking at San Francisco from Oakland, and that will probably never go away for them.
Yeah, it's like, what, 200 yards of asphalt, government land yeah. that's never going to change.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's literally a runway is their front yard, and you're not allowed to build on that old runway. So they've got a view forever. Good for them. All right. Well, we have a lot to talk about today. And as usual, I just want to start like with the history of not just Oak Park, but you guys. And I know a little more about you, Raj, because I've been communicating with you through this. But I know you definitely started out as a home brewer.
Yep. I'm still a home brewer.
Still a home brewer, yeah.
We just have a big home brewing kit at Oak Park Brewing Company, and we get lucky a lot.
You know, I did see your brew house. I've seen it a couple times now. And I don't mean this as a slight, but yeah, it's a big old home brewing kit. It's kind of what it looks like. What is it, 10 barrel?
10 barrel.
Okay. So big enough, but you still think of it as like you can just experiment like it's home brew.
Yeah, yeah. It's small enough to where you can, you know, be creative.
Okay.
And, you know, if you slip up, it's not a bad thing.
Right. You can fix it.
Yeah.
But how long have you been home brewing? How many years?
Man, I would say probably close to like 18 years now.
Okay. Yeah.
So I met Jeff, what, in 2010, something like that. So
okay.
I was home brewing. I started home brewing in 2007.
Okay.
So I don't know if my math doesn't add up. Hey,
yeah, you
know,
it's about 15 years.
15, 16 years.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's been a long time. And like I said, I still consider myself as a home brewer.
Sure. What got you into home brewing?
An excessive beer tab.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was like, you know, my buddy was like, hey, you need to close your tab out. And it was, you know, a tab that was running for like maybe like 2 weeks.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, I like beer, but not like this.
That's crazy. Yeah.
You know, so I ended up just taking a break away from the place. Took the money that was on that tab, the same amount of money, and purchased like books, a home brewing kit. I got myself around people that knew more about the beer making process. So it started out as a hobby, but then it turned into like a passion project.
Okay.
Yeah. So I started spending a lot of money on brewing equipment, ingredients. I was brewing pretty much with my 9-to-5 job. I was brewing about 3 or 4 times a week.
Oh, wow.
After work. Yeah.
What was your job?
I was in the screen printing industry.
Okay.
So, my days would start at 7. My brew days would end at like 2:30 in the morning.
Right.
Yeah. So,
got it. Okay.
It was a journey.
All right. And you met Jeff. Jeff, were you a homebrewer at the time too? Or
yeah, I started homebrewing back in 2005, 2006, in that same era as Raj. I got into beer because someone bought my dad. It was Brew It Up in Sacramento. You used to be able to go there and brew your own beer.
Yeah, I remember that place.
Beer turned out like trash now that I look back on it. We went, we brewed there, and then I just kind of fell in love with the recipe formation, the cooking aspect of it, and being able to control all of your ingredients.
Yeah.
And that's about when I started, and started with a brew in a bag kit. Second time, ended up buying a homebrew kit. I believe it was for more beer.
Nice. There we go.
It was the old Igloo, 10-gallon Igloo cooler, gravity-fed system. Yeah. Like $300 at the time. That was the second batch, and from there, just kept brewing. Like Rob said, I'd brew probably two or three times a week.
Okay. What was your day job back then?
I was a mortgage underwriting manager.
Oh, so something that made money even.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. More than brewing does.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, nice. And then is Oak Park both of your first professional brewing gigs? I don't think it is, right?
No, so I actually met Raj back in 2010-ish or so. It was at the Oak Park Homebrew Club's meeting they had. So the original owners of Oak Park had a homebrew club.
Okay.
And my wife Becca and I walked up, and Raj was the first person we met there. But we were out checking out homebrew clubs because we were opening another brewery in Sacramento that opened in 2011.
Okay. Got it. So you had another project before Oak Park, but met all these folks. So Oak Park Brewing, and you guys are the essentially co-owners, but it existed before the two of you. I see. And just for clarity for our listeners too, Oak Park's a neighborhood in Sacramento, right? It's like a burb of Sacramento.
Yeah, it's actually a historical part. Not hysterical, a historical, but a historical.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It probably can be hysterical at times.
Sacramento, there's a lot of history in Oak Park. It was more of a highfalutin place to live in the early 1900s. There was an amusement park. They had a trolley car system. It was the place that you wanted to be in.
Okay.
You know? So there's a lot of history there.
Okay, got it. So someone had opened Oak Park Brewing there before you guys, and then presumably wanted to sell it or just closed it, or what happened there?
So they were open for about, I think they just celebrated their four-year anniversary and then closed shortly thereafter.
Okay.
Lots of rumors out there about why they closed. But they closed, and then we took over about a year later in 2018.
Okay. And was everything just still in there when you guys took over?
Pretty much.
Brew house and stuff?
Everything was there. If the way the brew house looks today is how I walked into it, it was a lot dirtier and a lot... it was a lot of work to get it to where I personally wanted it.
Okay,
And, you know, but all the equipment was there.
Okay. And what about the rest of the tap room and such? Tap room's gorgeous.
The tap room was there.
Oh, so they did
a
nice
job. The restaurant
job.
Was there. Yeah. We redid some things in the tap room.
Okay.
I think I spent 2 weeks cleaning behind the bar because I don't think their tap room staff ever scrubbed the bar.
Yeah.
I think there was like a half inch thick, like dry beer crust on the back of the bar.
I've seen that.
Yeah.
I've worked in places like that.
Yeah. So
that's the reason I don't order draft beer at dive bars. Even if they have Sierra Nevada on tap, I always ask if they have it in a bottle. And that's pretty much the reason. Okay. But you still took over pretty much a turnkey place, right?
Yes, it was, yeah.
And what year was that? Sorry?
It was like 2019.
We moved in 2018, but we opened in 2019.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
It took me like, I think I spent like
6 months or
8 months, 9 months cleaning up the place to get it ready to where I felt comfortable brewing beer there.
Yeah. Okay. Can I ask you a business question?
It's sure.
For my own curiosity and those out there maybe doing this. So when you take over a place like that, like you're saying, there's a period of time before you're open, like 6 months. Are you paying rent for 6 months while you're cleaning all that place up? Or are you able to sort of arrange that with the landlord that you don't pay till you open? Like, how does something like that work?
So our landlord was cool with it. He actually gave us free rent until we had our ABC approval. So there's the processes of all your applications, ABC, TTB, before you could make beer, before you could sell beer.
Yeah.
And one of the things we negotiated in our contract for taking it over was that we had to be basically fully ready to open before they could charge us rent, which included getting your TTB license and your ABC license.
So super helpful.
Yes.
I always ask that because you'd be surprised how many people I hear go, no, we're paying rent from day one. And I always think, well, how can you afford that? That it could be $60,000 before you open.
Yeah, we wouldn't have made it for the 9 months, 10 months without that rent abatement.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Nice. Okay, so beer starts coming out in 2019. What style? What's the first batch of beer you guys brewed?
What was your first batch of beer, Mr. So
the,
Jeff P.
The
Scott?
First beer that I brewed there, I got to give a shout out to Revision and Jeremy.
Heck yeah.
He's a, love those a guys. Good friend, makes some incredible hoppy beer, and I love their Revision IPA, right?
Okay, yeah.
It's Simcoe and Mosaic.
Yep, great beer.
I was like, okay, I like that. I don't want to do an IPA with Simcoe and Mosaic. I want to do a pale ale because I didn't want to like step on any toes or anything, right? And I had never brewed on their on the system before. I didn't even do a test batch. I was like, I'm just going to go for it and see what happens, right? Because like Raj said, we're home brewers. We just go for it. And
yeah,
a lot of times you could fix things down the road if you need to. So I was shooting for like a 5% pale ale, but the efficiency on the batch ended up being like 95% versus my estimated like 80%. So it ended up being like a 6.5% IPA at that point in time.
Yeah.
And we just kind of stuck it with that and ran with it, unfortunately.
Was it good?
Oh, it was delicious. We still make it today. It's our probably our number three selling beer is the Oak Park IPA.
Okay. Yeah. So we have that on tap here at the Hop Grenade. It'll probably be here for at least a week. I think we got a half barrel of that. So if you want to come down to the Hop Grenade, you're not in the Sacramento area, you can try the Oak Park IPA. So having a super efficient brew house isn't a bad thing, right? Like, it's a mistake, but now you're probably stoked.
Yeah, it was great. I enjoy it. We enjoy it now. The benefits of that, we scale our recipes accordingly now, right? Like,
sure,
it's one of those things as like, a brewer, you have to learn how to adapt and change your processes based upon your equipment.
Yeah.
And then as your equipment changes too, things change and you got to pay attention to it. So, you know, like it probably saves us a bag of grain per batch being at that 95 percentile versus an 80%.
Mm-hmm. That shit adds up.
Yeah,
that's a lot.
It does, yeah.
So, Raj, though, it's your first pro brew gig, right?
Yeah, okay. Definitely.
Got it.
Definitely.
And did you quit your day job immediately and go to work for Oak Park, or
no? It was a lengthy vetting process because initially, like Jeff Beck and myself, we had a business venture that lasted for like a year and a half, and then it kind of dissipated.
Okay.
And one day, I was just like, "Man, I haven't talked to Jeff and Beck in a while." He texted me the next day, "Hey, man, you want to meet up and grab some coffee?"
Nice. Yeah.
Of course. I was like, "Yeah, let's meet up." So, you know, we sat down, and we're friends. We're friends, so, you know,
first
of course,
and foremost, yeah.
Conversation, how's the family, blah, blah, blah. You know, just chopping it up, and we got into what he wanted to talk about. So he basically asked if I wanted to come on and brew at this new brewery that they were working on. So,
what was your answer, Raj?
No.
Really? Why?
Yeah, there is no money in it.
well, facts.
You know, so he spent a lot of time with a longtime guest of yours, Jamil.
Yeah,
and Jamil schooled him on the whole production brewing lifestyle, and he was like, "No,
yeah, doing research and having that conversation." But, you know,
can we just say that I feel like Jamil, who is very kind-hearted and very open with his advice, is also such a naysayer sometimes about things like this. Meanwhile, pretty sure he just sold his brewery for a bunch of money. So, like, I'm just saying, you got to take Jamil with a grain of salt. Now, I don't think he was leading you astray. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm just saying, he's so hardcore about what can be the bad things, they probably forgot to tell you could do great.
Well, not even that. It was like this. So just by chance, me and my friend, we stopped by Heretic. I think it was on July 4th.
Okay.
It was like a random, we were coming from somewhere. And we were like, hey, let's go by Heretic, check it out. And Jamil just happened to be there. I've never seen him in person.
Okay, yeah.
I've met his wife many times. And I was like, I got to say something.
Right, nice.
Yeah, so I'm thinking of an icebreaker. So I've never been a porter fan.
Okay.
But I had two samples of the porters that they had on tap.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, man, these are good. I was never a porter fan. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, this is my icebreaker.
Right.
So I was like, I'm going to go say something. He's sitting down taking a break. So I was like, hey, Jamil, I'm so-and-so, blah, blah, blah. It's like, I listen to you guys on the Brewing Network, and
thanks.
I'm really impressed with your porter styles. I'm not a porter fan, and my friend, like, pretty much vouched for it. Yeah, he's never liked porters.
Yeah.
But I was like, if all porters tasted like these two porters, I would be a porter fan.
Right.
You know, so that was the icebreaker. So we're talking about beer, and he started going into personal stuff. Man, my back. And
yeah, that's Jamel. Like, yeah.
You know, it was like, and I was just like, oh my God, he's sharing personal stuff. So we had an opportunity to talk to him for about an hour and a half.
Wow.
You know, so with that being said.
Yeah, he talked you out of being a brewer.
No, he didn't. He gave me a perspective.
Okay, all right.
You know, so I was just like, you know, when Jeff vetted me, I was just like, man, I've already taken four steps back. I can't do it again.
Yeah.
You know, but just to move forward in the vetting process, I think, oh, and this is a funny story on the vetting process. So Jeff ended up, this is after the fact. So
wait, so you left this coffee meeting with a no, Jeff, like that, or?
I left with a, let me know where you're at.
Yeah.
Then we can figure it out from there.
A
couple months down the road.
Because
this was probably pretty close to when we first got the keys to the building. So I was pre-planning where we're going here, right, with the other ownership. And so I wanted to start that ball rolling so we could make sure we get there at some point in the very near future once we open.
Okay.
So after the fact, I ended up getting a phone call from one of the business partners. And I was like, somebody's playing a joke on me. Why would this person be calling me?
Yeah.
And then his text came through, hey, so-and-so is going to call. And I was like, okay, it's legit.
Right.
So long story short, it was like we went through a vetting process, and in the end, you know, my thing was like, it's got to make sense.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I can do the job, but it's got to make sense. And, you know, just having that conversation with the last individual, you know, he was like, man, Raj, what do you want?
Okay. Just so I can paint the picture, you have a family at this point? You got, so, like, mouths to feed?
So co-parenting, and, you know, it was something that was on my mind.
Yeah,
but
okay.
Nothing too crazy. But
it's not just yourself to think about. That's what I'm getting at here.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, and just being a little older in life, you're like, man.
Yeah.
It's like, you gotta elevate.
Yeah.
You know, not decelerate or
you know,
drop down or take four steps back again.
So they tell you to write your own deal. They say, what do you want?
Pretty much. And, you know, one of the things that came up was the vision. When they started talking about community, you know, helping, impacting people's lives, of course, producing quality premium beers, I was like, okay, I can get behind that. So when it was conveyed to me, hey, what do you need?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I wrote down everything that I needed. It's like, okay, done deal. You're my dude.
Okay.
You know, so from that day on, we've been rocking hard.
Okay, yeah.
You know, so I can say my piece. I don't have my hands tied. There's a creative aspect to it. My word means something.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we all bring something to the table. We're like Voltron minus the one lion.
Okay.
There's four of us, and we make it work, and we stuck to the vision. You know, it's all about the community.
Nice.
You know, it's like, how can we build something, a safe space to where everybody can come and chill out and have a cold one?
Yeah.
You know, and just relax and kick it.
And that's what I saw when I met you guys. That's why. So I invited you on because of the beer too. Don't get me wrong. But you had such a cool event during the California Craft Brewers Conference at your place. A couple of friends of mine said, hey, we're going to Oak Park. You should come with us. So I did. And I jumped in right in the middle of this event that you guys were doing. And it was so community oriented. And it was so cool to hear everybody speaking there that I came up and introduced myself to you right away, Raj, because I just was like, okay, these guys kind of have something different. Because, you know, all right, I've been doing this for a long time, and I'm going to tell you right now that like 9 out of 10 brewers come in here and talk about community, right? And I don't think they're lying, right? But they don't mean the same thing. There's a difference between like, oh, my regulars are out there, that's my community, and like and community outreach. And bring in the people that are outside the door, inside the door. And that's something that you guys do different and that not everybody does. I also think it's kind of hard to do, by the way. So I'm not even talking down on these breweries that aren't doing it. I just mean the word gets thrown around so often that it's nice to see someone who's really bringing community inside the door. And that's what I liked about you guys right off the bat.
Cool. And that's, you know, with things that are going on in the industry, I can only sum it up like this. we are who we are in and outside of the brewery, so it wasn't hard for us.
Nice, yeah.
You know, we're just good people.
Sure.
We try to be good people, you know, but at the end of the day, it is a business. But, like, you know, it's like nobody wants drama.
Yeah.
You know, we want a safe space. It's all about beer.
Yeah.
You know, and who doesn't like a good beer?
Absolutely.
You know, so.
Well, and you guys, in my extensive research, I read your about page. And even in your about page, your guys are like, hey, we're pretty much in the brewery every day brewing beer. So if you want to come by and say hello, you should. Like, say hello to us. And it's true. I walked in to pick up beer the other day, and the brewery is so accessible. It's not hidden away in the back. It is not down an alley or a hallway. It's in the tap room. It's right there. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And sure. I think that adds some, like, if not inclusivity right off the bat, approachability, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you guys are just saying we're approachable. Just come and say hello.
Yeah. I mean, Raj is there more than I am, and I'm there a lot.
I got a cot in the basement.
But yeah, when you walk into the front door, the brewery is immediately to your right. Like, you turn, if you walk in the front door, you take two steps, you turn and look, and there's the brewery to your right.
Yeah.
And, you know, one thing I love about Raj is he does greet almost every single customer that comes in with, hey, how's it going?
Nice, yeah.
And then he'll also, you know, give them like a salutation goodbye and say, thank you for coming. We appreciate you. And that is that approachability. Like, we do a lot of conversating with guests as they walk in and as they're leaving, you know, and I think that creates that comfort with guests to where they feel they can come up and talk to us whenever they want.
Yeah.
Which builds community, right?
Absolutely.
Friendships. It builds relationships. It builds community.
Yeah.
So with that being said, Jeff, you said one thing. Can you name another?
He's
putting me on the spot. Damn.
Yeah.
This is what we do, man. We educate, create, and have fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so it's like, we're like the Bartles and James of the beer world. You know,
I don't know which one's Bartles, but
it doesn't even matter.
Yeah,
we have fun, man.
We do.
Yeah.
As you should. And every, I think, craft brewery that has started recently has to have something like that to make it. Like you guys saying, you opened in 2019, and even by then, the competition was fierce enough that if you don't have something extra, something different, Yeah, I'm sure it's working well for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, in the Sacramento area, last time I looked, there was 85, 90 breweries in the greater Sacramento area,
wow,
right?
Yeah.
And when I started back in 2011, I think we were like brewery number 7 in Sacramento. So in the 10 years or so, well, actually, no, less than that, it was like 8 years, you know, you went from 7 breweries to 85.
Right.
In the greater Sacramento area, which is crazy to think of that type of growth in a business.
Absolutely.
But yeah, now, you know, it's been fairly saturated. So, you know, what makes your brewery stand out?
Yeah.
Great beer obviously helps.
Yep.
Right. And then it's what you're doing with your community.
Sure. All right, well, let's do this because I want to try some of this great beer. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more from Oak Park Brewing and some of their beer in my glass. We'll be talking about that. You're listening to The Session. Hang in there. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the program. Thank you for hanging out with us. You're listening to The Session, and we're still hanging out with Oak Park Brewing out of Sacramento, California. We've got Raj and Jeff here, and we just got some of their beer in our glass, which I'm stoked about. Before we get into that, hey, real quick, one of our wonderful sponsors, Beersmith. Go to beersmith.com. You can get your free 30-day online trial to use their Beersmith brewing software. Tons of the pro brewers, almost every home brewer I know uses it. Tons of the pro brewers who come in here use it. You guys use Beersmith?
Yes, we do.
To this day? See, yes. I love that. You'd be surprised at how often that happens. My friend Brad over at Beersmith's a good guy. He makes a good product. Check it out. Go to beersmith.com. All right. What's the beer I have? Let me say it again. What's the delicious beer that I have in my glass right now?
So this is the People's Lager.
Okay.
So we started brewing this beer in 2019, the latter part of 2019, going into 2020.
Okay. It's basically, I know a little bit about this brand. I know nothing about the beer, so I'm going to take a couple guesses after tasting it. It's like a pre-prohibition lager, right? So like more full body, less or no rice?
No rice.
No rice.
Yeah, okay.
Flaked corn.
All right.
Yes.
But I wouldn't call it, it's not like corny, right? Not like a, right? But it's a nice full body like American lager. All right, so with that, we'll dive more into the beer too. Do you want to talk about the brand, People's Beer?
Yeah, we can talk about the brand. So for those of you who don't know, so this is the People's Lager. This was part of the People's Brewing Company brand from the late 1800s to up until now. But
okay,
the way that we came in contact with the People's Lager in 2020, early 2020, we wanted to reach out to the Mack family. They were the last owners of the People's Brewing Company before it was torn down.
Okay.
So we wanted
to. Which was like the 70s?
1974.
When it got torn down, basically?
Yeah, they bought it in 1970.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, we had like a meeting or something one day, and somebody was like, oh, let's do a collaboration with, you know, the Mack family. And of course, we shot our shot. You know, it was going to be hit or miss.
Yeah.
But we hit the spot.
with the People's Beer.
Yeah. So
Let me just back up a little bit. Okay. So Theodore Mack, we're saying, bought the People's Brewery in like 1970.
And
October 10th.
October 10th, 1970. Right. He buys the People's Brewery. Where is the brewery?
Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
In Wisconsin. And in doing so, he becomes the first black American to own a brewery?
Yes.
Is that right? Okay.
Yes.
So, and this October 10th day is important. Hold on to that, listeners. We're going to talk about that too. Okay. So he takes over the People's Beer and sounds like only runs it for 4 or so years.
Yeah. So okay. It's a lengthy story.
Okay.
But you know, he just dealt with you know, a few things like racism, black bagging,
yeah,
false promises, you know, and I'll say this, you know, lack of knowledge for running a brewery.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, but
yeah.
In 1974, like I said, they closed down and this beer was not produced anymore.
But the brand sat lingering somewhere.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so in the latter part of 2019, early 2020, we decided to reach out to his estate. At that time, we found out that he passed away a year and a half before.
Ah, okay.
We made contact, but we put it on the table. We're like, hey, we want to do a collaboration beer. We want to pay tribute to Mr. Mack, being that he was the first person that we know of. We have documentation that he was the first African-American brewery owner in the United States.
Yeah.
And we wanted to rebrew this beer.
Nice.
So with just building a relationship and them giving us their blessing,
yeah,
we released this beer on October 10th, 2020, which was the 50th anniversary of the date that he purchased People's Brewing Company.
Nice.
So, So the beer.
And is it Mr. Mack's recipe?
The recipe is actually close to about 100 years old because there were two people on the brewery 50 years before he purchased it.
Yeah, okay.
So it's super simple. We had the yeast. The yeast had to be refabricated.
Oh, right.
So it took about 3 months to refabricate.
From where?
Brewcate.
But somebody had plated the yeast or what?
White yeast had plated it.
That's cool. Okay.
And, you know, once we had the yeast, we were like, okay, the recipe is super simple, you know, and like you said, when you tasted it, it just tastes like history.
Yeah.
Something back in the past, it was full bodied, got flavor, it was dry, it was crisp, it was like definitely sessionable.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, still an easy drinking lager, but with some body.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're super proud of it. And it's provided a lot of opportunities.
Okay.
For us, you know, one of the opportunities is having the opportunity to share Theodore Mack's story and his journey with purchasing the brewery. And even in his personal life, I was like, man, he did a lot.
Okay.
You know, a lot of people don't know that he was a big part of the Civil Rights March in Washington, D.C. He curated all of the transportation for all the individuals that wanted to go from, like, Wisconsin, basically the state of Wisconsin.
Wow.
He's a veteran. You know, he graduated from Marquette University. He was a social worker. He did a lot.
Yeah, you know, what a legend.
It's a great story, man. So if you ever get a chance to you know, read about it, definitely pick up whatever book it is that's telling the story.
Yeah, Theodore Mack and People's Brewery,
yeah,
I guess at the time.
Yeah.
Now it's People's Beer because you're just doing the one
brand? We're doing
brand?
The brand,
yeah.
So it's
okay.
The People's brand. So with the People's brand, we have other entities incorporated into it. We have the People's Icon line.
Okay.
So when in the Icon line, we've worked with Tupac's Estate.
Wow.
Sammy Davis Jr.
I was right there. I was like, I know it's Sam something.
Ray Charles, Otis Redding.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And so, that's doing what with those entities?
So they basically wanted to have a beer created. It's like somebody saw the Tupac beer and it the message or the act just caught on like wildfire and people wanted to be a part of some type of collaboration with us.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We have people on deck.
Nice.
Should I put one of them out there?
Yeah, let's do it.
No one listens to this show anyway.
Wu-Tang. They're interested.
Oh, yeah, nice.
You know, so we've got a lot of opportunities with the People's brand. And, of course, Milton Bowens, he curates a lot of the artwork for the People's Icon line or anything People's brand.
Okay.
You know, so he's, if you don't know or you haven't seen his artwork, you can check him out on Instagram. Milton Bowens, 5'10", it's going to blow you away. Once you see his art, no matter where you go, when you see it, you're like, oh, that's Milton.
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
I met him at the pub the other day.
Yeah.
It was really nice to meet him.
Yeah.
So with the Icon brand, you're putting out a beer for each of these? Is that what it is or something else?
It depends on, we have released beers like our Beerish, our non-alcoholic beer that's a part of the People's brand.
Okay.
We've also released like an IPA. That was real good. We need to brew that again.
We do, yes.
So yeah, so we're definitely making a brand. So it's going to take some time. We're taking baby steps.
Okay.
But we do get opportunities.
Got it.
Yeah, okay. It kind of started in probably, I think was it 2020 for February for Black History Month. We ended up partnering with three other black-owned breweries in Northern California. And we put some pretty impactful activists on the can label, and that kind of started it all. People saw that and then they were like, how do I get my picture on there, or how do I get, you know,
my story
on there and tell my story? And you know, it just kind of snowballed from that first Black History Month collaboration that we did.
Okay, so I hope you don't mind me saying this, but it's a compliment. It doesn't seem to me like you guys can produce enough beer for that sort of excitement level and a movement happening. Is this all coming out of the brewery, out of the pub?
Pretty much. There's some opportunities on the table, so hopefully we can lock them in.
To expand a little bit.
Yeah.
But so, right now, all of those cans, whatever it be, the People's can I'm looking at right now, that's coming out of the brew pub right
yes.
there. Okay.
Yes.
So you guys are pushing out a lot of beer out of that 10-barrel system.
Yeah.
No wonder you're there every day, Raj. Yeah.
Right.
You gotta get it done.
We can't really put more tanks in without, I mean, if you've seen our brewery, it's pretty small and
there's not
a lot of room to grow.
Right.
So the next step is going to take a fairly hefty decision to make financially on where to go, right?
Do we fill
the side lot up with tanks? Do we build a new brewery somewhere?
Right.
Do we buy another brewery?
See, and right now, that's an interesting question for you guys. If you were another brewery without these cool projects and this outreach happening, I'd say to you, don't do anything. You just keep that brew pub rolling because that's the climate right now. But you guys have a different thing happening, and I feel like the opportunity to push more out there is maybe, I don't want to just say more lucrative, although that's certain, you got to make money too. Maybe the right word is more important, to be able to put more of it out there. So you guys have a different decision than most brewery owners right now. Most brewery owners would just be looking at the numbers. And the numbers would say, stay inside that brew pub, right? Like, because growth right now is a little hard to come by. But with these opportunities for you guys, you might have to take a different angle at that.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is about the message and the meaning behind the beers that we do and the collaborations that we do.
Yeah.
And spreading that word. You know, more so than bottom line of making dollars.
But you don't want to make the wrong, you know, that's the other thing. Sometimes people take on too much overhead and then you've crushed yourself too. So
yes,
I don't envy your position, but it's exciting at the same time. You know, it's an exciting problem to have, that you guys have all these opportunities for beers and collaborations like that. That's pretty cool. Do you have a canning line?
No, we use the Kanban still.
Yeah,
so
Kanban still.
They rock it for us, yes.
Oh, they're
and we
great.
Will be seeing them tomorrow morning at 7 a.m.
Bright and early tomorrow morning, yeah. How many barrels do you guys can at once when you guys do that? You know, or I guess you go by cases at that point, don't you?
So we can twice a month, basically, and we do about 100 cases a canning run.
Okay.
So it's about 10 barrels per canning run. Usually we divide it between two or three styles that we have available at that time.
I would think that the people's beer is popular enough that it takes up a canning run every time, or at least part of it.
We can it at least once a month, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And we usually do about 50 to 75 cases of it every month.
Okay. And is it on tap at the pub all the time, too?
No.
No.
Not all the time.
Okay, yeah.
We wish we could have it more, yeah. But
yeah.
You know, lagers take some time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, can we go back to the recipe a little bit? You said it's simple. You want to tell us about it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
we can do that. We're here.
The recipe, it's very simple. It's only three malts in it or adjuncts. It's six row, which I really six never row. Used before, right? Yeah. So you're talking, like you said, pre-prohibition lager, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's six row, it's Munich 2, and flake corn.
Interesting.
That's it. Yeah.
What's the difference in six row? Not flavor wise. I'm talking like fermentation and stuff. Did that throw you for a curve? Does it behave any differently than two row?
Not that I noticed. No.
Okay.
I think the kernels are a little smaller, right? Okay. But our mill's pretty tight, and that's why we get our 95% efficiency.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So other than that, then it's just a flavor profile from six row, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Is it hard to get? Is that a normal thing, six row?
No, BSG has plenty. They've never had an issue getting it for us. So
okay,
yeah.
So six not used a lot.
In the course of this show, I've heard it three times. I want to say, you know, and then Munich. You said, is that the other
Munich 2? Yeah,
and then Munich 2, and that's it for that. Okay, and hops
cluster. Straight one, the single hop edition.
Like from the early 1900s, it was probably one of the more widely grown hops in the Sacramento Valley at that time.
Okay.
But yeah, cluster.
Interesting.
You know, $7 a pound.
Oh, that's even better. Do you guys use cluster for anything else besides this beer?
We do sometimes. Yeah. I can't remember anything.
We do now. We use it in our Monday Vibes Blonde Ale. So we use it as a bittering hop now that we have it. We used to solely use Magnum.
Okay.
But now, since we use it in Peoples, we have started using it in some of our other light beers as the bittering hop.
Okay. $7 a pound. For reference, what's Mosaic-ish?
On our hop contract, it's like $15.50 a pound.
That's what I thought. So I'm like, Cluster's a great bittering hop now all of a sudden.
Yes.
Because what do you need? You need alpha acid, and that's it. What's the average alpha of your cluster, do you know?
It's like 7.6 or somewhere in that range.
Call me Magnum. It's fine.
Yeah. So, you know, it works. It's a clean bitterness that it doesn't have any weird funkiness to it, like Chinook might or CTZ might, and Magnum's pretty clean too, which is why we always use Magnum. But
lots of people do. Mm-hmm. And then how about this yeast that they had to grow up for you? Did that give you any trouble, or is it just kind of a standard lager yeast?
No, it didn't give us any trouble. They did all the work.
yeah
getting it back.
We just tasted it.
I reached out to Y Yeast and said, hey, we're looking for this particular yeast strain, because I couldn't find it anywhere. No yeast propagator, manufacturer, whatever you want to call them, had it. And so Y Yeast said they had it in their yeast bank.
Wow.
And so I was like, hey, you know, we want, you know, like a 10 barrel pitch of this. And they were like, well, it's going to take like 3 months to get it ready for you. And I said, okay, that's fine. Just get it ready for us. And when it's ready, send it out. And then
we'll
make the beer at that point.
Wow. Okay. And other than that, it behaved like a normal lager yeast? Okay.
Yep.
And you guys do you use like tasty method of lagering, like speed things up at all, or are you very traditional slow lager?
We try to lager 6 to 8 weeks. We usually start fermentation around 48 degrees.
Okay.
And kind of let it run about 2 weeks at that temperature.
Okay.
And then we've tried different methods after that, where we kind of let it free rise to 55 for diacetyl rest, but then we've also talked to people at like Bierstadt out in Denver that makes phenomenal lagers. And
yeah, we have one of theirs on tap
now. They do a different method where they actually drop the temperature instead of doing the diacetyl rest. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Did you guys try that too?
We did. Yeah. I didn't notice any real difference in the flavor profile of the beer, but.
Is that drop of theirs an actual diacetyl drop? Or it's just something they do?
I think it's just something they do in the lagering process of the beer.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Great brewery, by the way. Super proud. We're one of the only places in California on the West Coast to have their beer on tap right now.
Yes. Did you get to try it at GABF, Raj?
Which one?
Bierstadt Lagerhaus?
Man, there were so many beers. I didn't drink a lot of beers, you know, most of the time I was working.
Okay.
We'll try one before we leave then.
Yeah, we've got their Oktoberfest on.
Okay.
So, nice. Yeah, that's what he sent us. I mean, it's no slow pour pills or anything that they do, but yeah, if you don't know Bierstadt, check them out. They're good people and good beer. Well, that's a great lager. Super clean, really nice. It's clear that you guys spent some time on it. You didn't rush through it. Which is probably painful sometimes to watch one of your very few tanks just sit there full for 6 weeks.
Typically we have two tanks going simultaneously with it. So we have 8 tanks total. So,
you've got to sort of
pretty much tied up with people's all the time.
So to do that, you probably have to stack up all your other beers for quite a while so that you can get to that.
Yeah.
Okay.
We play tank Tetris.
Yeah. Now, you did mention that you could, you know, just to explore, just to brainstorm together, you could put some tanks outside and such. One of the cool things about your spot in Oak Park there is you're on a corner, like a triangle corner. So you got a cool, very large, I consider it large, beer garden, outdoor space, a decent sized indoor space. And then potentially, I guess, room to put tanks outside of the building. Is that what, is that an option?
It's been talked about. At the end of the day, you got to do what's best for the bottom line. But I would hate to see the mural on the side of the building destroyed, and then we lose that space for.
So yeah, I don't know if you got to see it when you came down.
Yeah,
when you open the when you walk in the front door to the right, we have a side lot. We call it our side lot.
Yeah,
it's
courtyard.
About 30, 40 feet by a 200 feet.
Yeah.
And we do a lot of like private events out there, catered events, music shows, things like that.
Got it.
And that's where we would plan to put the new tanks if we got them.
Makes
sense. So then we just got to cut a hole in the wall and then
run it right there.
Everything. But you know, with that comes new glycol chillers, new boilers. Our glycol chiller is probably 50 years old. Not going to lie. It works great, but it can't handle any more tanks and things like that. So then you get into that aspect and you're like, okay, well, now, you know, it's not as simple as putting two tanks outside, right? Now you got to invest in your glycol chiller. You got to replumb everything. You got to put the tanks outside. And, you know, there's a lot of opportunity at this point in time with other breweries to where they have extra space, or they may not make it through the next year because COVID was extremely difficult on a lot of breweries.
Absolutely.
To where that's another option, right?
Yeah.
Versus building your own, because building your own is going to take you 2 years to build. And, you know, at that point, you're not producing any beer during those 2 years either. So.
Right. It's funny, not funny, the domino effect of these decisions, right? You know, from the outside, you just go, oh, yeah, you guys just need more fermenters.
Yes.
No problem. But no, it's a full-on domino effect.
It is, yes. Yeah. There's a lot of extra things that go into account. You have to take into account when putting even one tank in at some breweries, right? One tank changes your glycol flow, which then, you know, you got to replumb things. And, you know, it's all about planning and trying to think forward. So that way, when you do have to make these things changes, you can without impacting too much of your operations.
Absolutely. All right. How about we do this? Because I want some more of your beer. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, more from Oak Park Brewing. We've got a lot of beer to try and more to talk about. Particularly, we haven't even gotten into the MB2A yet, which is a whole new project and organization that I know Raj has been heavily involved in. I got to learn about it for the first time for me at Great American Beer Festival, actually. So we're going to talk about that and lots of other things. Also, an event that you guys are putting on next weekend. So hang in there. You're listening to The Session, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for hanging out with us. You're listening to The Session here on the Brewing Network, and we're still hanging out with Oak Park Brewing. We've got Jeff and Raj in the studio. And we're about to try some more beer. This one, a collaboration beer, I do believe, with Sudvark. Is that right?
It's with the UC Davis Master Brewers Certification Program.
Okay, out of yep. Out
in
of Chico,
conjunction
there, Davis,
with,
I mean.
Yeah, in conjunction with Sudworks and Oak Park Brewing Company.
Got it. Okay. And this is called?
The Embarrican.
The Embarrican. Yeah, let me do the, I'll do a can on the camera over here. And what is this?
Amber L. All
right. So tell me the nature of the project.
So we ended up speaking at UC Davis 2 years ago. And we were just talking about how Oak Park's involved in collaborations and community and how we are building our brand. Hmm. And through that conversation, we ended up offering the UC Davis Brewers program to come out and just watch us during a brew day, get some hands-on experience, because they don't theoretically get a lot of commercial experience in the brewing program, right?
Sure.
It's a lot of book knowledge. They brew on like a pilot system.
They have a nice pilot system.
Very nice
pilot
system.
Still not a pro environment.
And so we invited them out. They came out. And then we ended up talking to them about doing a collab at that point in time. And so we did a collab last year with them. Well, we brewed it over 2 days. We split the class in half. And then for this year, we ended up partnering with Sudwork because they're in Davis. They are adjoined with the Brewers program there in Davis. They share the same building.
Great brewery.
Phenomenal brewery. Brewery of the year last year at GABF. So,
yeah.
And so this year we ended up splitting the class in half.
Okay.
And saying one day at Sudwork, half of you guys go to Sudwork, half of you guys come to Oak Park.
Nice.
We're going to brew the same base style beer and just see how they differ between Davis water profile and their system and Oak Park water and our system.
Sounds like a competition to me.
Slight. It was.
If I'm in that class, I'm like, oh, I'm on team. You know, I'm team.
Oh yeah, Raj hyped it up. He got our team chanting for
nice.
Oak Park.
And, yeah, yeah. That's what I would
our
do.
Our team bought into it, and it was a lot of fun. The beers turned out both very delicious, but different because they dry hopped their beer, and we didn't end up dry hopping our beer.
So I'm drinking yours.
Yes.
It's absolutely delicious. Before I get into how delicious it is, though, who did the artwork on the can?
So that was actually by one of the participants in the
class
program.
Yeah,
yeah. So they had somebody else curate the artwork. So I don't know the exact. It should be on the can somewhere, but I don't know the exact.
It's fucking fantastic because, and I've put it. If you're watching YouTube, or you can go to our YouTube page and check it out. I've put it on there so you can see on the video. The bear just has this look, this I know something look, and he's probably a little drunk, but you're not sure about it. He's got a beer in his hand.
He does have a beer in his hand.
He's got a smile on his face. He maybe is about to eat you or maybe wants to share a beer with you. It's just great art. It's cool.
Yeah, and I think it embraces what goes on in Davis. A lot of people ride bikes.
Yep, it's got that.
In Davis. And
the hops in there.
You know, a lot of the participants in the program, they're from all around the world.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so just to get a chance to work with the students or the scholars.
Yeah, I think most of our class was from Anheuser-Busch InBev in Brazil. They paid to have 10 or 12 of their employees come up and take the program at UC Davis. So.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard that that's kind of a common thing for Anheuser-Busch around the world, like you said, to come there, so... Well, that's cool, though, to get a little diverse crew like that and different beer knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, amber ale, not my style. We get people coming to the Hop Grenade still asking for amber ales, like one every, 3 weeks. I'd carry this amber ale. This is fantastic. Mm-hmm. This, to me, it's a bit more, it's kind of like Tasty's brown ale, right? Like, he put a little twist on it where it got a little hoppier, got a little different, it's a little new age. And that's how I interpret this beer. It's not a brown ale, but I mean like new age amber ale.
Yeah, so I definitely like reds and browns.
You know,
those are some of my go-tos. And when they decided to brew an amber, you know, we had a lengthy conversation on the recipe and what you guys want to do because we were like, we're going to do whatever you guys want us to do.
Okay.
But they were open to our input and feedback.
Good, yeah.
You know, so when they were like, well, it needs to be a little, like, they on their pallet system, their beer came in a lot darker.
Okay.
So the SRM, they're like, it's got to be this.
They wanted it like that, or they wanted
it
lighter?
They wanted it to be a little lighter. So yeah, we're like, yeah. But we got caught up on one thing, and I was just like, dude, it's like, I was like, don't worry about that. We got that.
You mean gets caught up on.
No, but it was one of those things. We were talking about the beer, but we were like, we'll make that happen.
Okay.
But they were like, no, we got to do that.
You're like, we got that.
We got you guys.
Okay,
you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
But you know, and that's the beautiful part about doing a collaboration. It's a true collaboration if everybody has their input and the final product comes out the way that everybody wants it to turn out.
Sure.
You know, so, but
this is one of the best ambers I've had in so long. A little slight toffee to it, but it's not like a cloying sweet toffee. It's just back there. It's like, it's almost like you had a little coffee this morning. It's like way back there. I think really dry and crisp at the same time. So you're getting some amber sweetness in there without it hanging around. I would say it's hoppy, but it's not bitter. I think I'm just getting hop character kind of on top of that toffee, which makes it a little brighter. Like the hop character is bright, whereas the toffee's like, okay, I got a little toffee. It's delicious.
Yeah.
What are the hops in it?
I don't remember.
Yeah. Oh, no, well.
Do you remember?
I mean, was it a Cascade?
I was going to say.
It was like Cascade or Centennial, one of the two.
We stuck with the C's.
That's what it tastes like.
One of the things we stressed, we're like, okay, if you're dry hopping it, it's not too style. So we wanted to keep it to a traditional, like, amber ale. So I think it was Cascade
now that you mention it, yeah.
And maybe like Centennial.
Yeah.
Okay.
And one other hop.
Okay.
So, but, you know, as far as like dry hopping, we were like, let's brew it to style so we know what it tastes like.
And what about the malt? How did you get that body and flavor without it being sweet?
So they curated the recipe. I can't remember. It's been a while, so everything's starting to run together. I can't remember exactly the recipe, but they created the recipe amongst the full class.
Yeah.
And
it was the same base recipe
for both
facilities.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's delicious.
So it was interesting to taste them side by side.
Did you guys use the same yeast in each brewery?
We did. We actually provided seed work with our Kal-El yeast because they don't use it very often there.
How dare they?
Hey.
Yeah. This is a really delicious amber. Like I said, I think the best one I've had in a long time.
Thank you. It's
like old school, new school. I don't know how else to describe it because it's old school in the way that it tastes exactly like an amber should, but without all the sweetness. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like we do get with our higher efficiency, and we typically mash drier, so I think our beers tend to finish out drier. We still are able to get malt character out of it,
okay,
but they tend to dry out more so than we would expect them to.
Okay. All right, can I ask you another Sudwerk question?
Of course.
I think you know what I'm gonna ask. The People's Lager.
Ooh.
Don't they have People's Pills or something?
Yeah, it's a great beer.
I should have asked you off air if I'm allowed to ask this question. Not only is it a fantastic beer, it's won gold. Like, I don't think it won this year. It won two years in a row or something. I absolutely love that beer. I only just thought of this yesterday because I was thinking about you guys coming here. And we don't have to stay on this if you don't want to. But I was thinking about you guys coming here. And then I had also mentioned Sudwerk to someone who works here. And they were like, wait, the People's Beer. Didn't you just bring in People's Beer from Oak Park? And I hadn't put two and two together like that. Is there any issue there? You guys just figure that stuff out?
No. Trent and I go back probably 10 years at this point in time.
Yeah.
He's a phenomenal owner, great person, good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just had conversations about it.
Okay.
You know, we talked about it, and we're cool with everyone kind of running their own thing, doing their own thing with it. And theirs is different than our brand. And
they definitely look different on the shelf.
Yeah.
It's only one little brand of theirs, although it's
their most successful beer.
But
no, we both have just kind of talked about it and
and
have come to like a mutual agreement that we both can do what we need to with our brands, and we're not going to step on anyone's toes or have any issues with it. And you know, that's kind of the bigger picture of the brewing industry, right? It's a lot of collaboration, it's a lot of relationships, and it's a lot of people working together to make things happen. So
good. I'm glad to hear that. And I didn't expect a different answer. But also, even in the brewing industry, people are nice, nice, nice until it comes to their brand. And I'm that way about my Hop Grenade, too, by the way. Although even then, I'm nice when I tell you to stop using it. But just whenever it gets to brands, it can be strange. All right.
It can, and it happens, you know, but...
Every now and then.
Every now and then, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a delicious beer, so thanks for sharing that. All right. I wanted to talk about the NB2A, and of course, I've been using the acronym the entire show, so there's a whole host of people who have no idea what I'm talking about. Do you want to help me help us understand what that is?
Yeah, so the NB2A stands for the National Black Brewers Association.
Okay.
So,
which is brand new, right?
BBA.
Yeah, yeah.
And for the 1B, the 2, and the A.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, as of May 2023, we launched the National Black Brewers Association. For me, I'm super proud that it's activated.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's something that I was talking about way before I started commercial brewing. You know, it's like on my trek to look for black brewery owners, black brewers, just reaching out to other people that I found that were home brewers, commercial brewers, black brewery owners. You know, we were always like, man, we need to do something to come together, pull everybody together.
Sure.
So we can work as a team to accomplish, you know, like, business ownership, you mm-hmm. know, bringing people of color into the industry, educating people on beers, you know, creating resources. You started talking about equity and diversity, inclusion,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it was a conversation that it's been had like over the years, even before me.
Okay.
You know, people have tried to set things up and it just didn't work. And just so happened this time it's taken off.
Got it.
Yeah.
And was that just sort of the right combination of people together to help launch it? Or what do you think made it finally take off for you?
So one person made it pop off.
Okay.
What I was talking about doing, I talked about it for 3 years and they made it happen in 2.5 months.
Okay.
You know, so with that being said, it's up and rolling. Mm-hmm. So, you know, no... I'm like, let's go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Everybody's here. So there was a number of people. We were all having the same conversations, but we weren't working together.
Mm-hmm.
So over a short period of time, we've all come together, and we're having these conversations now, you know, because, like, ultimately, like, we're, like, any minority in the craft beer industry, all together, we're less than 1%.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, but, like, right now, everybody wants to be a part of that. It's like, equity's there. How can we get to that equity? And, you know, just, and this is, in my opinion, just on a side note.
Sure.
If you keep people out, you're missing out on a lot of things.
Heck yeah. You know,
different cultures bring different things to the table. And with the National Black Brewers Association, even though we're black for it, we're inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like, we're willing to work with any and everybody that needs help.
Yeah,
you know, so it's something new we're building. I'm super excited for the next 2 or 3 years to come, because we're actually going to be doing work. Not saying that they're not doing work now, but it is.
Yeah,
they're like an infant right now.
Sure.
So in the next year and a half, 2 years,
who
we
knows?
Should be taking those. We should be getting our Frankenstein steps on, you know, trying to get our legs to where they need to be.
Well, it sounds to me, you know, you were saying how stuff that you've been talking about for 3 years, and then it kind of got pushed forward in 2 months. You know, what is the I'm going to mess up the slogan, but like, perfection is the enemy of progress, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm guilty of this in so many things. Where, like, I think sometimes, even though everyone's around working on it, if it's not just right, well, we didn't do this yet. Well, we didn't do that yet. So let's not start it, right? And sometimes you got to just start. You just got to hit the ground and go for it. And you can fix it all later, right? And so it sounds to me like it finally got going. And now you're like, all right, we'll see what happens, because it's just a couple months old, a few months old, and there's a lot to work out. But I will tell you, my introduction to the MB2A at the GABF was awesome and so positive. And the message was very similar, if not the same, that you just gave me, which was, hey, everybody's invited. I started this organization because it was needed, but now everybody's invited. And that was a message I got like loud and clear. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. It's, you know, even in a short amount of time, we've accomplished a lot.
Nice. Yeah.
You know, as of August 2023, there was a second version of the Black is Beautiful campaign launched,
mm-hmm. yeah.
which MB2A helped make that happen.
Yeah.
And a portion of the proceeds are going to go back to the National Black Brewers Association.
Great.
Also in that same month, we were able to pass Black Brewers Day in California, I think in New York, Louisiana, and a few other states. And, you know, I didn't see that coming, but it happened.
But it happened.
And I'm glad that it's happened. So it's synonymous that that date falls on October 10th.
There it is. All right.
Yeah, the day that Theodore Mack purchased or opened the doors to the People's Brewing Company.
Yeah.
You know, so as of October 3rd, this past
So 2 days ago. Yeah.
2 days ago.
Yeah, it's official. There was a proclamation put in a few states to where we can now recognize National Black Brewers Day.
So that's what 3rd. I was going to ask you. You just used the word. So we're calling it National Black Brewers Day, but it's only recognized so far, of course.
In a few states.
In a handful of states. Okay, yes. California being one of them, right?
California, New cool. York, yeah. Louisiana.
Okay.
And we have two more states to go. Once those two states are in, then we can take it national.
Nice.
National.
I love that, yeah.
Like, yeah, so, you know, in a short amount of time, we've accomplished a lot. The board members I call them the all-star team. Marcus Baskerville, you know, he's
a weathered board souls member. In Texas there.
He started the Black is Beautiful campaign. He was assisted by the Brewers Association, which they're a part of the National Black Brewers Association. They're kind of being a mentor, like a supporter.
Great.
Behind the scenes, we got Celeste Beatty,
mm-hmm.
Holland Brewing Company South, out of Rocky Mount, North Carolina. You got Garrett Oliver.
Yeah.
The icon.
If Garrett's not on there, there's a problem. Yeah, he's been doing this for so long.
There's some heavy hitters on the board.
Nice.
You know, so we're just looking to move forward and put some work in.
Yeah.
You know, what that work looks like right now, I will probably find out tomorrow. You know, so there's an opportunity to be on the board, but I will be recognized as an advisory board member. So
have a meeting tomorrow where that's happening.
So we have a conference call tomorrow with all of the advisory board members that are prospects.
Okay.
So yeah.
And then this beer festival that you guys are doing next weekend, it's October 14th.
Yes.
Is that part of the NBBA too?
So that's an Oak Park event.
Okay.
It will eventually morph into something, an entity under the MB2A blanket or umbrella, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
With that event, we're going to work in conjunction with the National Black Brewers Association, and we're also going to pay tribute to Mr. Theodore Mack.
Yeah, yeah.
Always. We're going to recognize the past, the present, and the future of, you know, Black people in the craft beer industry.
Nice.
And minorities. The coolest thing about our events, they're always diverse.
Okay, yeah.
So, like, this year we focused on minority-owned, you know, beverage vendors. So when I say beverage vendors, because we're going to have beer,
mm-hmm.
wine, cider.
Nice.
We're going to have kombucha.
Okay, yeah.
We're going to have coffee.
Yeah.
And we're going to have non-alcoholic beverages. So, you know, it's just a different approach on having an event of celebration.
Sure.
You know, so we want to, you know, it's like include everybody. You know, it's like even if you're not a minority-owned business, if you're doing the work and your values line up
sure.
with what we're doing, come on, let's go.
Yeah.
You're an ally. Let's make this happen. Because one day you're going to need some support. And who better to call than Oak Park Brewing Company?
There we go. Nice. So, all right. Before we move on, because I want to talk more about the event itself, make sure everybody knows how to do that. If anybody wants to get involved in the MB2A, where can people go for that?
So, yeah, you can check the National Black Brewers Association out at www.nb2a.org.
Okay.
It'll have all the information. We have opened up the website to membership. So if you're a home brewer, commercial brewer, commercial brewery owner,
mm-hmm.
or anybody in the industry that wants to be a part of it, you know, there's a place for you at the National Black Brewers Association.
Excellent. All right, so go check that out. And I'm excited just to see the growth and what's happening next. Okay, and then just so everyone has the information about your event on the 14th, what's it called?
Yeah, it's called the People's Beer Festival.
Nice.
What do you call it, Jeff?
The People's Beer Festival.
Yeah, so we changed up the name this year. The former name was the People's Harvest Time Jubilee, which I put a lot of thought and effort into that name. So
okay.
When I hear people call it the Jubilee, I'm like, yeah, you're there in the beginning.
Okay.
But anyway, one thing that we noticed last year, nobody knew what it was.
Yeah.
So it was either Brew Festival or Beer Festival.
Yeah.
So I'm cool with the name, and everybody knows what it is now.
So the problem was that no one knows what a Jubilee is? Let's just get to the bottom of this now.
It didn't have Beer Festival.
Yeah, it didn't have Beer Festival or Brew Festival.
Right.
You know, and you know, and I got it. You know, typically, like setting up these events, it takes a team.
But I see where you were going because you just described that it's not just beer. So you were trying to be more inclusive by not calling it a beer festival. It's the problem with marketing sometimes is that our best efforts can just no one gives a shit.
Yeah, because it was all about sowing seeds and reaping the benefits. You know, so it's all about the people, the harvest. Mm-hmm. The celebration.
Sure.
So, in short, now it's the People Beer Festival.
Okay, yeah.
You know, so, People Beer Festivities.
Yeah.
So, it still works.
Yeah.
You know.
And where can people go to get tickets for
so
that?
So, you can go on Eventbrite. Your keyword or your search word is going to be the People's Beer Festival.
There you go.
You can also go on to the People's Beer Fest. .com.
Okay.
And they'll have more information on there. And this isn't just a one-day event. So we're going to have events throughout the week starting on October 10th,
okay.
which is going to be National Black Brewers Day.
Yeah. What so are you doing for that?
We're figuring it out.
Okay.
We're going to do something. So we're going to keep you posted I'm thinking about doing something on Instagram, just reaching out to a bunch of people throughout the United States and say, you know, I just want them to be able to jump in for like a few seconds and say, hey, happy National Black Brewers Day
from
so-and-so brewing company in Wisconsin or Florida or, you know, Massachusetts or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, just a couple seconds. We did a flash mob like, what, a year and a half ago? And it was cool.
Okay.
Because like people were just jumping on from everywhere across
nice.
The country. And just to have that and post it up and just
That's
see
great.
Who chimes in, it's going to be great.
So you're starting the festivities on the 10th. You're going to do stuff probably every day till the 14th.
So we'll
start
on the 10th, Thursday
night,
which will be the 12th. We're going to have the Black Label Art Showcase at the Brick House Art Gallery in Oak Park. So we're going to have DJ there. We're going to have Can Label Art and a few other pieces of art. Then we're going to have a bottle share.
Okay.
So with that being said, there's going to be a few board members in town for all of these events. It gives you a chance to come out and meet possibly Garrett Oliver, Celeste, Marcus Baskerville, John Renthrop from Cajun Fire. It's a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people.
Yeah.
On Friday, there's going to be a Black Film Festival. This is going to be dope. So they're going to be showcasing film festivals for the 50th anniversary of hip hop and also showcasing films from the beer world. So you got the new Black is Beautiful film, which is it focuses on Marcus Baskerville and his journey with the Black is Beautiful campaign. And also they're going to be showing One Pint at a Time, which was produced by Aaron Jose. Is it Jose?
It's Jose.
All right, because yes. It's spelled with an H. And I'm like, am I pronouncing it right?
Right.
Great guy. So he's going to be there. We're going to have Clint Lanier, the author of The Rise and Fall of People's Brewing Company. He's going to be in town for the event.
Wow.
Yeah, so there's a couple of special guest artists that are going to show up. We're going to have Christopher Martin from Kid and Play. He's going to be in town.
Wow.
Cocaine from the Dog Pound. Of course, we just signed Digital Underground on to shut down our event.
On the 14th?
On the 14th.
I want to go.
And
just
then there was, is that Alonzo?
Alonzo from The Wrecking Crew.
Or The Wrecking Crew, yeah.
You know, and he's synonymous with being with the NWA.
Yeah.
You know, so there's other people that are going to be in town. If you like basketball, Mr. Rob Archie's curating that. So through. You're going to see some heavy hitters.
Is there a place that, like a central place for information? Is that through the Oak Park Brewing?
No, you want to go to the People's Beer Fest.
Okay.
Webpage.
And even the side events will kind of be on there
everything
too.
Yeah, on Eventbrite.
Yeah, you can get an all inclusive ticket for like $100 that gets you into like everything. All of these events.
Heck yeah.
After parties.
And
so can I just park my RV at the brewery?
You could, on the sidewalk.
Because I'm like ready to go now.
Justin, you come down, you're good to go. We got you.
I'm happy to pay. I just want to sleep in my RV.
We got a whole side lot. It's gated, it's locked.
Good, man. You can sleep in the basement like I do.
I hear there's a cot down there for us. That's perfect.
Yeah. It's warm, you know. The boiler's going. The glycol chiller's going.
That's great. I run cold. It'll be perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That sounds like a great week. That's really exciting.
And just to finish it off, so on Saturday the 14th, we have our main event. The after party is going to be at Slim and Husky's, which is right across the street. And there's going to be after party at Fixin's after the Black Film Festival. So Sunday morning, we're going to have a brunch at Oak Park Brewing Company.
Okay.
So, and that's going to, entertainment's going to be by Adrian Bellew. He's a guitar finger tapping technician. He's amazing. So that's how we're going to end it off. And I'll be on a plane flying to Nashville. At 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah. On Sunday.
You did forget one.
Oh, you messed that up.
Which event did I forget, Jeff?
You forgot the Fixin's beer and pairing with Marcus and Celeste.
On Friday night.
Yeah. Oh, nice. On Friday. Okay.
Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff going on.
There's a lot of stuff going on, but yeah.
So it's easy to forget.
It is. You know? But yeah, no, Raj is taking off. It wasn't necessarily his choice to leave Sunday morning. He is flying to Nashville for round two.
I mean, Nashville's fun anyway. So you're going from one fun week to another,
He's
hope?
Going for like one day.
A couple of days.
Okay.
In Nashville. But then he's going to journey on his way to do some other things. So I'm excited for him.
Thank you, Jeff. It's been four years.
All right, give me the main website again that everyone can get.
Okay, you can
go Beer Fest.
peoplesbeerfest.com, or you can go to Eventbrite and keyword the People's Beer Festival in Sacramento, California on October 14th, 2023.
There we go. Plus all the surrounding events. Check it out. I'm going to be there for at least some of them. I have an event here on the 14th that I'm already scheming ways I can get out of, so I'm hoping to be there with you guys. All right, we're running out of time, but I have a couple things left to do. For one, we have another beer in our glass that's delicious, so let's talk about that before we get into a get-to-know-my-guests round,
Okay.
If you guys are cool with that. But what's this beer?
So the final beer we have today is Beer is Black History. It was our Black History Month collaboration for 2023 with Drought Season. It is an Imperial Stout with coconut, pecan, and cacao nibs at 9% alcohol.
It is 9.9, which it does not taste like 9.9. It also does not overly taste like coconut, cacao, or what's the nut you just said? The
pecans.
But they're all in there. But not one of them like is the thanks for the coconut. They're all pretty well balanced.
I call Raj the tweaker.
That's me.
Not in a bad way, but in a very good way.
Here in Concord, we have different ones, but tell me why. Yeah.
Well, Raj has an amazing palate, and he likes to tweak a lot of our beers where we use adjuncts.
Okay.
To get them to where they are pretty well balanced between all the flavors, right? He doesn't necessarily want one flavor to dominate everything, right? He will tweak it until he gets it to where he thinks it's very well balanced between all of them. So,
and all three of these, by the way, especially coconut, easily be overpowering.
Yeah. They can, yes.
So that's a skill that the tweaker has some skill right here.
The tweaker has some skill.
Right here. This is delicious.
What do we call it? Well, we changed the name, though, from tweaker to Flavor Master or Flavor Mixer or something like
something
that.
A little more positive.
Just call me Chocolate Weirdo.
That's your name for yourself.
Yeah, that's going to be something. I got to use that for something. The Chocolate Weirdo.
Yeah. The can is cool. I just showed it up on our YouTube page if you guys want to see it. But no, this is a delicious beer. So you know, you're like, oh, I don't really like porters. I'm not a big Imperial Stout fan.
Okay.
This is fantastic.
Cool. Yeah, and it's, you know, with this collaboration, we reached out to, what, did we do this one with the other three breweries?
No. We did. Yeah, we did it with.
So we did Montclair Brewing Company, Helicoastal.
And Full Circle.
So this was like a quadruple, collaboration. And
nice.
Yeah, we all brewed different beers for this mixed four-pack.
But used the same base label that said beer is Black History.
Yeah, because we were thinking of, we were trying to come up with something. That slogan is just amazing. I'm like, it just pops when you see it. It's just to the point.
It's a great slogan.
Yeah, beer is Black History.
And the slogan itself stands out to me right now because it's something that Celeste said at the, so I did a panel at the Great American Beer Festival and Celeste was on it there. And her point was how historical beer is in Black Americans' lives. And she was saying it in a way that we all agreed. She's like, you don't know this, but beer is not new to Black culture, and it never has. It's been around since the beginning. And then she talked about home brewing and community brewing and all of that, and I was like, so beer is Black history. It's the same. So it's just, for me, it's fresh in my mind coming off of that talk with Celeste.
Yeah, and it's just in your face.
Yeah.
Great slogan. We couldn't come up with anything, so I was like, was it me or whoever? Hey, maybe let's reach out to Drought Season and see if they want to do a collaboration.
I mean, it should be a year-round brand for them or you or somebody because fantastic.
That's their slogan. So when you see that, that's Drought Season. And it's ironic because they reached out to us to do a collaboration before this.
Okay.
But after doing my due diligence and talking to my, my mentor and coach, he said he wouldn't do it just because it was a lot of politics, and I was just like, okay, we can't do that. But
yeah,
it opened
up
the door to do this collaboration.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Keep it simple. Keep it beer.
Yeah. Keep it beer.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, it's a delicious beer. All of them were fantastic. I appreciate you guys being here to talk about all this with me. By the way, you can go to OP Brewco, OP Brewco, opbrewco.com. Learn more about Oak Park Brewing. They got a great website. You can learn about them, their events, the menus on there, you name it. So go check it out at opbrewco.com. You guys want to do a little get to know the brewers with me?
Yeah.
I like ending the shows this way nowadays.
Let's go.
I get to ask non-beer questions and find out some things about you guys, and I think our listeners like it too. We get to learn some new things. We're going to start with some simple stuff, right? I'm probably going to ask you both. I might direct it at one of you. Both of you can answer this, though. What's your most frequently used emoji right now? What do you emoji people the most?
The thumbs up?
Yeah. Mine's between that and the rock fingers.
Okay.
But there's a lot of thumbs up.
Lots of thumbs up.
It's almost embarrassing how many thumbs up I use.
I do that in a lot of the thank you praise.
Oh, the thank you praise, yeah.
I got to compliment our staff.
There you go.
I've taken over GM roles of the restaurant. So when people step up, I got to say thank you. And the thank you praise comes on there. So
it's a silly question, but I like thinking about a person's personality and how they emoji.
Yeah. I think for me, the one I've been using more lately is the
The point finger.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can say you rock or you suck.
It's all context.
But it's all been positive. Right? Yeah.
It's all context.
You know, but no, that's been my go-to lately.
All right. This is a new one. I put it in here partly because I'm a car guy, but also because I think your first car kind of says a lot about your history in life. So what was your first car?
That we drove or that we purchased?
That's a great question.
Yeah. Open-ended question.
So the first car, so I'll either. The first car I got, this is a great way that you put it, Jeff, was nobody who knows me will be surprised. A very shitty, like 1970 something Chevy Nova. But I never drove it. So that's a good
amazing
point.
Car, though. I would take that car today with a heartbeat.
This was four doors.
It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. So, but it was my first car, but it never hit the pavement. So that's a great clarification you made.
So did somebody give it to you or did you just?
Okay. My dad brought it home with a blown up engine and he said, you can fix this, right? And I was like, maybe? I don't know.
Sure. Give me like $1,000 to buy a new engine. I'll put it in there.
It never got fixed. That's what happened. So, and that's the only car ever got bought for me. My dad was, he's one of those, my dad was a you work for it guy. So he gave, the thing he gave me, I still had to work for, but I never built an engine before.
So let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Did he work for that Nova or did somebody give it to him?
Someone totally gave it to him.
Yes, they did.
100% it was given to him. Yeah. Great questions.
Oh, man. Dad, you didn't work for it.
Nope.
You know? What was, I wasn't smart enough to do that, Raj. I was like,
I'll just take it, Dad. Thanks.
Yeah. What was your
body design was like amazing. I love that body design that car.
Yeah. What was your first car? Right?
So just so happened, my first car happened to be a blue Chevette, henceforth Oak Park Brewing Company's little red Chevette.
Oh, nice.
Because I was a Prince fan.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, so that was my first car. But the crazy story behind that car, I had a schoolmate that eventually became a friend. His dad gifted him a 1976 Corvette.
Okay.
So that's the bicentennial, like, Corvette. That's a collector's item.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so he would always approach me, and we weren't friends yet. Hey, man, I heard you had a Vette. You want to race for titles? I was like, no, man, you can't handle it. So my car was a Chevette. Mm-hmm. You had to shove it to start it.
Yeah.
You know, but I was like, nah, man, you ain't ready for this. Yeah. You know, but eventually we became friends and we had laughs after that.
There we go.
Yeah.
And
yours, Jeff? The first car that I purchased was a 1967 Camaro.
There we go.
Which I sold literally 6 months after getting it because the frame was welded in like four spots and the guy that I took it to said it's not worth you putting money into. And so then I ended up buying a 2002 Chevy Silverado, which I still drive to this day.
Is that right?
Yep.
We rode that jewel here.
Not today, but we've taken it on many road trips, yes.
That's hardcore.
2002.
Okay.
So,
I like it.
So a question on the car. So the guy that told you it was welded in four parts, what did you do with the car?
I sold it to a mechanic. Not guy.
Not him. Okay.
But some other mechanic who has the time and ability to fix a frame that is so messed up.
It's called the mechanic special.
Yes.
Yeah. You still see him on Craigslist today.
But I wish I kept it, though. But, you know, hey, it is what it is.
It was probably good advice.
It was, yes.
Yeah.
This was from the guy who was going to paint it. He was like, I don't want to paint your car because it's not, you're going to waste money on it.
So, all right. Since we're going back to our youth, what is a habit, good or bad, I don't care. You pick. What's a habit that you've picked up from your parents that you're just like stuck with, you know? Like I've said on here, mine's I procrastinate. I learned that from my parents. They're procrastinators.
Oh, I got it. While you're thinking about it, I got it real quick.
All right, Raj, go ahead.
So, short story. I stopped talking to my dad for 30 years.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, once my kids came into the world, you know, I was looking at him one day. I was like, dang, man, I don't want them to feel the way I feel about this guy.
All right.
So I was like, I got to fix it. So through fixing it, I realized that that was me I was talking to.
Mm.
I'm nothing like my mom. But my bad habit that I think that I got from my dad, his go-to, and remember we had to talk about explicit words.
Mm-hmm.
You knew something was going down when you heard, motherfucker.
Yeah.
So that's like, that's I find habit, myself yeah. going, oh,
this go.
Mom, what the?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's, yeah, that's probably the only thing. Outside of that, I'm a free spirit.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's a tough question.
Yeah.
I mean, I think from my parents, if I had to pick one from each. So my dad, he was extremely cheap growing up. He used to make us pay him to use the dryer, right? So,
okay.
You know, it yeah. was one of those things. He was like, hey, you give me 50 cents or you go hang your clothes up outside.
Yeah.
And I appreciate the value of money that he instilled in me, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like I don't want to instill that on my kids, right?
Maybe not so hardcore.
Not so hardcore, but yeah. it's still that, hey, it takes a lot of work to pay the bills. It takes a lot of work to
yeah.
buy you guys clothes, so don't go screw it up by running around. From my mom, I would say it was more her nurturing aspect, right? Like one of my fondest memories of her was she would just, when I couldn't sleep, she'd like scratch my back.
Yeah.
And I do that to my wife and all my kids when I help them fall asleep now. So.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, Jeff, did your dad ever say, what do you think, electricity grows on trees?
No, but.
<That's>, yeah. You think this is a game?
Similar, right. Oh, man. All right.
He did put maxes on how much I could spend on shoes. He was like, $100 for some Jordans? He's all, nope.
Nope. Oh, as my dad too, yeah.
Yeah.
My mom was a little cooler about it. Like if I could catch her on the side, I might get the Air Jordans. Mm-hmm. But if my dad was involved,
nope.
Oh, you could forget it. We're going to Payless.
Yep.
Every time.
He worked hard for his money, yep. right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. All right. What's your go-to karaoke song? I don't care if you karaoke or not. If I were to put you on the spot today, you got to sing something. So if I made you do it tonight,
the only song I've ever karaoke'd was Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh shit, you went for it.
That's okay. My wife's like one of her favorite songs, and she will sing. She's karaoke'd it many, many times in her life.
Nice.
And that was the only one that I've done ever.
Okay.
Can you give us a little bit of that?
Mama.
Ooh. There it
That's
is.
That's all I got.
That's cool, man.
That's good enough. Yeah, I'll take it. Raj?
I've never done karaoke. My daughter's mom cannot sing, but she would do karaoke and Living on a Prayer
by Bon
Jovi was not her.
But she would do it
perfect
anyway.
Perfect selection of song, but she would have fun.
That's hardcore too.
But I would say I'm a Temptations fan.
Yeah.
So if I was to do any karaoke song, I would probably do like Ain't Too Proud to Beg.
That's a fucking great song.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I know you want to leave me, but I refuse to let you go.
All right. One day we're going to have to bring the records out, because I do this to folks who like Motown. And it's this. Everyone thinks it's the Temptations until you really sit down and play the Four Tops. Mm-hmm. Now it's a different kind of Motown, but the Four Tops, they just belt out a particular type of soul. The Temptations, it's like smooth, right? It's just very, everyone loves it. You can't not like the Temptations. The Four Tops come in a little earlier than them and a little harder. And anyway, one day we might have to sit down and do a Four Tops Temptations playoff.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You ever go back and watch Motown, the 25th anniversary?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they had a battle between the Four Tops and the Temptations. And
yeah,
I noticed
yeah.
early on, like all the Four Tops songs were like the same type of music.
How
it was
dare
like
you.
The same song, but just remix
all around the world.
You take
same
it back.
Song.
Yeah, no, like for real. I was just like, this
right,
is
yeah.
the same song.
You're probably
you know, but
right,
I,
yeah.
I picked that up like a few years ago. I was never a New Edition fan, but once they got older, you know, and they started, you know, they were young adults, blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, man, okay.
You're
I can
like,
get
all
these
right.
guys.
Yeah.
But the era of Bell Biv DeVoe,
mm-hmm.
Bobby Brown, Ralph Tresvant, they all used Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis to make that music. And if you listen to it, it's all similar. They just changed certain things.
Yeah.
I was like, those are producers.
You must be my age. You just named all the people I grew up with.
Yeah.
Okay.
They were prophets, man. Hey. Smack it, flip it, rub it down.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
I was just thinking about that.
Yeah. So yeah. Good. That was back when also I would go to the Sam Goody and buy the single tape.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't afford the full album, so I'd buy the single tape.
Yeah. Those were the good old days. That's when music was still music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Is there a beer... So I said not brewery questions, but some of them are. A beer or a brewery that most inspired you to become a brewer? And it doesn't have to be a pro, by the way, but if there's a particular beer you drank that was like, oh, man, that's it. This is my jam, and this is going to be my gig in life. For me, I'm not a brewer, but you know everyone on the show knows Sierra Nevada Pale Ale changed my life. I didn't even like it the first time I drank it, to be honest with you.
It was bitter.
But I loved it. Seven times later, I loved it.
Yes. Once you got acclimated to that hoppiness on it, yeah.
Right. So anyway, just throwing that one out there for me. And like I said, it could even be a beer that you tasted and were like, wow, this is super inspiring. But it's got to be back in the day. It's got to be before you had your careers.
So up until college, even in college, all I drank was either malt liquor like Mickey's, St. Ides, and then in college I drank a crap load of Bud Light, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know why I ended up on Bud Light, first Coors Light or whatever. But then I met my wife, and it was like the day after we met, she was drinking Downtown Brown.
Oh, yeah.
And I tried it for the first time, and I was like, oh, that actually tastes like something good.
Mm-hmm.
And from then on, it's been... Downtown crap beer, right. Yeah.
Okay, so that one just really changed your palate. Like, this is what beer could
be. Yeah, it's not just fizzy yellow water, right? There's more to it than that, right?
Right, okay.
Yeah, I would have to say, and this is, I don't know if you remember this or not. So this was in my Pangea days. That's how I got into craft beer.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Rob turned me on to the Belgian
stuff. In Sacramento.
Yeah, yeah. So you remember Odonata?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, mm-hmm.
Peter Hoey's
the Saison
and Tracy.
Yeah,
Rick was in that too. Yeah,
so they had a beer
Saison
that was called the Water Witch.
Oh no, that was a different one.
It was so effing good.
Nice.
And when I found out it was a seasonal and I couldn't get it, I was sore. I was hurt.
Yeah,
I was like, that beer was so good, but. Yeah, that would be it for me.
That's a good one. I like it. See, I like that. That's just not something off the shelf. That's a good answer. All right, here another brewery one. Now this could be anybody. It doesn't have to be a brewer at all. It could be famous people, alive, dead. But if you could brew with somebody, like bring them into the brew house and have a day out of it. Again, could be anybody. It doesn't even have to be a brewer. Family, famous, sports. Yeah, there's a lot of people in the world.
There's a lot of people in the world.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be the one, a one, whatever comes to mind, you know.
I got one.
You go. I'm going to think about this one for a minute.
Okay, so this is funny. So as a youth, like I was probably like 5-6 years old, I realized I wanted to be a ventriloquist comedian.
I love that. Now I got to scratch off a question off my list based on that answer already.
Yeah. So, and so, you know, I loved comedy. So if I had to bring somebody back that's passed away to brew with, I would love to bring Red Fox back.
Hell yeah. Okay.
And I would be like, hey, we're going to brew this beer, but every now and again, I want you to call me, you big dummy.
yeah.
You know, but he was a phenomenal comedian. Yeah. He was ahead of his time.
Yeah.
And he didn't get his just dues until he was like later in life because he was so explosive.
Yeah.
In his comedy, but he was clever.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, so but yeah, I would love to like
do you still with him. Do you still have your little ventriloquist doll?
No, I don't have my dummy, but I do work with a lot of dummies.
Fair enough.
What are you saying, Raj? Yeah.
No, yeah, that was that's my comedy bit.
Yeah, no, that's good.
Hey, I gave up the dummy, but I'm still surrounded and I work with them.
I think that's a great start.
I give
start.
No respect. So, yeah.
All right. You got one, Jeff?
That's a tough question. I mean, I think a lot of people I've met and that I'm friends with have all come about from the brewing world, right? So I don't think it's necessarily someone in the brewing world that I would want to brew a beer with, because people in the brewing industry are really open and they're really open to coming and hanging out and making beer with you and teaching you what they know. I think like spiritually I'd probably want to brew with my grandpa, who you know, when we first opened our brewery in 2011, the first one, he was excited for it, and then he shortly passed away and didn't really get to try any beers. So I think that's where I would end up.
That's a good one right there. That's a great one.
Yeah, so, you know, it's like with their brewery, the grand opening. That was amazing.
You know why we opened on December 31st? Because everything was branded 2011, and we had to open or else we have to change all our merch. And so we just opened the doors. And we're like, let's go.
Hey, that was a beautiful, like, man, it was amazing.
Yeah.
It was like, it was so hyped up. There were so many people, like, behind you guys.
Yeah.
Like, you know, me and my girlfriend at the time, like, we were looking for their brewery before they opened it. And when we found it, Jeff and Becca, they were sweeping the floor and there were no equipment in it.
Oh, right.
So yeah, so we were just talking to him. We were like, hey, are you guys gonna be kid friendly, blah blah blah, so on.
I think I just finished grinding the floors with the big disc grinder, so there was like dust everywhere.
So we ended up we were like, once we found out they were going to be kid friendly, we're like, dude, we're going to bring like all these puzzles, and on grand opening night, like, dude, it was so amazing.
It was so amazing
just to see the good people, and like everybody was behind them.
I love small business grand openings like that.
They're fun. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. When you're out to eat, if your food is bad, do you say something? do you send it
Raj?
Back? What do you do? You do. You're a say something.
I'll give you. I got stories.
That's all right.
He sends it back to our kitchen when it's not right. He's like, hey, dude, you messed us up. You got to fix this.
No, this is like, man, so there's it's different ownership now, but there was a craft beer establishment that focused on craft beer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my previous experiences weren't the greatest, but then I had a friend that new beer, he's like, no, man, come back in.
Okay.
You know, try it out. And I was like, okay, cool. So me and my friend, we go and we try it out. And when our beers came out, she's like, hey, can you taste this? I was like, I already knew that it wasn't the beer that she ordered, because that's her favorite beer. I could physically like look at it and say, this beer's not the beer. So I was like, hey, send it back. She wouldn't send it back. So the waitress came out. I was like, hey, you know, it's like, this isn't the beer, blah blah blah. Oh, I'm gonna go check, blah blah blah. It wasn't the beer.
Yeah.
You know, so you know, I was like, okay, whatever. So our food comes out, our food's wrong. I never order my burger rare.
Okay.
You know, so I'm like, oh man, the food's messed up, the beer's messed up. Okay, I'm trying to work with this.
Yeah.
So the table next to us, they called the waitress over and they were like, hey, we're not happy with our, you know, with our food.
Okay.
So long story short, they got our food.
Ah.
They comped their whole meal. You know, so.
And you never. Go ahead.
You know, I was like, hey, you know, it's like, this isn't what I ordered, blah, blah,
yeah,
blah, blah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool, blah, blah, blah. She comes back with the bill.
Oh.
I was like, wow.
But you said something.
Wait a minute.
Wow. So, which is crazy. I know the guy that owns the establishment.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And my buddy works there. So I was like, oh, okay. I was like, So I break out a $100 bill.
Uh-huh.
She takes a $100 bill and she goes, let me see if we have change.
Okay.
She comes back, we don't have change. I was like, okay. Took the $100 bill. I was like, okay, we're not paying for anything.
Yeah.
Tell so-and-so to call me. We'll talk about it.
Okay. Yeah.
So it was that experience. But I was just like, typically, I would send the food back.
Okay.
But I was like, that...
I know.
Turned into a whole different thing.
That's just weird.
And I was just like, and it started with the beer. I knew it wasn't the right beer, but my friend was like, no, we're good. Blah, blah, blah. We got it back. And
but this is why I asked this question, because there's always a whole lot of things. So for me, like, it depends.
That's where that's where I fall. It depends.
And and I'm pretty good at reading people, right? Like, from doing this show for a long time, that's just what I have to do. And so to me, it all starts with that. So, like, I've sent a beer back going, like, hey, this isn't what I've ordered. And I had this cool experience because it was a cool person. She went back and was like, look, this is the tap we poured it off of. It's labeled that way. And I was like,
easy fix, right?
Well, I was like, luckily it was empty, bro. I was like, I hear you, but I'm telling you,
that's not the right beer.
So will you do me a favor? Just go look at the keg collar for me. And I'll tell you what, I'll buy like three of these beers if I'm wrong. I'm trying to be cool here. But just go look at the keg collar. Sure enough, they tapped the wrong keg, right? So, but that's only because the bartender was cool. Like, I could tell.
Yeah.
I've had it with other bartenders where you even start to say it and they're like, fuck you, that's the beer you ordered. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Got it.
Let it go.
It shouldn't be like that.
No, of course it
shouldn't be like that. It's like.
But not everybody who works at every place cares. Right, so it depends on where you're eating, and it depends on who's on shift
depends
that day.
Who's working in their,
it depends on if their cat died that morning. To be honest with you, like this, like fair enough. The coolest people in the world can be total assholes. I've been that guy, not the coolest person, the total asshole. Right, it just depends.
It does, yes.
Yeah.
So I'm like a feel it out kind of person, but I tend to speak up. I tend to kind of go like. It's a little wrong.
Well, I mean, it goes back to being like. You know, if I know the business owner and then I know the head barkeep.
Sure.
You know, like,
well, then you have a lot of leeway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but it's, you know, even with Oak Park Brewing Company, it's like you have to hold everybody accountable.
Yeah. Agreed. You know?
So it's at the end of the day, it's bottom line, and it all, everything rises and falls on leadership.
Sure. Well, and as an owner, too, there's a different, it's how you look at the customer also. So my GM here, Kevin's his name, he's great. And he has a saying here, and that is, the customer is not always right, but they're never wrong. And so you have to approach everything like that. So you can sort of guide a customer to, hey, we screwed up or we didn't screw up, but they're never wrong. You still got to kind of deal with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, there are exceptions to every rule if the customer's just being a dick. Right? Yes. But still, in general, if it's just complaints and it's talking about quality or service or this or that, they're not always right, but they're just not. They're just
they're
never
not wrong.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So typically, I won't send food back. So like if I order something.
I know. I see this.
If I order
all the
something,
time.
Say I order a burger and it's overcooked, I'll eat it.
Yeah.
I won't
send
it back. The times I have sent something back is when it's either been the wrong food.
Okay.
Or there's something in the food that shouldn't be there.
Oh, there you go.
Like,
right. And that's a
cilantro.
Given.
So, like, no, I ordered like a
hair.
A hair. We, at one point at this brewery in Sacramento, way back in the day, we ordered like a Caesar salad or some type of salad, no seafood or anything in it. And it came with a shrimp tail in it that was...
Just one?
One shrimp tail that the rest of the shrimp had been eaten off of it.
Oh, no.
And so I was like, no, take it back.
Yeah,
right?
Of course. No.
Yeah, but most of the time, like if it's cooked what I want, you know, I'll eat it. Whether it's 100% accurate or not, I'll eat it. Just because that's my personality.
I'm with you on that. Like if I ordered, you know, medium rare and it's well done, I'm eating it. Like it's
Well, you know, like if you go to like a super fancy steak place and you pay $100 for a filet mignon and you ask for it medium rare and they bring you one well, you're gonna probably send it back, right?
Or you're right. Like, no, circumstantial.
That's not right.
So question for you, Jeff. Did you go back to that establishment?
No. Okay. And it is now, and so it is now
that's what
business.
It comes down to.
Right. You
know, I never went back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, in my experience, I was like, come on, man. You're just like, don't play with my intelligence.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And had they fixed it for you, you'd have gone
different
back.
Different story. Yeah.
You'd have gone back. And so that's a good point for like restaurateurs and staff to know too. Like, you're responsible for whether or not this person's ever going to come back.
Yeah. Because, yep. I mean, you got two tables side by side.
Yeah.
And totally two different experiences. I'm like,
yeah. Well, why the me? Same experience with two different outcomes.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Know? No, that's so, not good.
Yeah. You know, things happen. You move forward. You don't harp on them. But that business is doing extremely well. So shouts out to them. They know who they are.
Good for them.
Yeah.
Are either of you superstitious at all? You know, black cats, whatever.
Nowadays, I'm going to say no.
Okay.
When I played baseball back in my early teens, late 20s, or early 20s, late teens, yes, I was.
All right.
But now I'm not, yeah.
What was your most irrational superstition when you were playing baseball? Like, couldn't wash your jersey or whatever?
No, it's more like how you put, like, it was weird, like how you would, like, put your jersey on or what pocket you'd put your gloves in and things like that. Yeah,
bro, that's OCD. That's not superstition.
Well, hey, I'm not OCD anymore then, I guess. Yeah. You know, like, oh, the one time I put my glove in this pocket, I lost.
Oh,
and then
God,
now
yeah.
I got to keep it in this other pocket because that's when I win. So,
I love
you know,
it.
Yeah.
So what happens when you don't have the glove? You forget the glove, you don't play?
I mean, you need a glove to pitch, pretty much.
What else? Yeah. You put it in your pocket. You're talking about like
a batting
glove. Well, like different things. Like sometimes it was like batting gloves, right? Like you put it in your pocket this way because you got a hit.
He called
your gloves on.
He called home for it to be brought.
Like, Dad.
Hey, I can't.
I lost
Dad.
My glove
Wait,
again,
time
Dad.
Out. Yeah. Time out.
Yeah, yeah.
They'll be here in 10 minutes. Time out.
No, you know, there's like, you know, like is sports. There, I think there's a lot of superstitions in sports where like you get in a routine and you're like, hey, I did really well this day because I did X, Y, or Z. That has nothing to do with your performance at all, right? Like there was a time where I wouldn't step on the foul line because I knew like, hey, every time I don't step on the foul line, I do okay. I do well, right?
Yeah.
Or like, you know, it's if in between each pitch I step back here and like regroup my thoughts, like, you know, I do better, right?
Right. So, routine.
It's routine, yeah.
And if some of that routine is superstition, so be it.
Yeah, it has no meaning on how or no impact really on how you do, but mentally,
yeah.
Mental is a big impact on, or I should say, your mental state has a big impact on what you do performance wise in sports.
And I would say that baseball, of all sports, not your mental, but what we're talking about, like your train of thought and your superstitions, like more than any other sport. Like
it's tough. Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. Baseball players get weird with superstition.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I have any superstitions.
Okay.
Really. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, one more, and this is probably an easy one. We got time for this one, but okay, if you could retire tomorrow wealthy, right? Like, you don't got to work anymore. You decide how wealthy. I don't care, but you don't have to work anymore. Everything's taken care of. Where do you go live? Where do you want to be?
I would live at Oak Park Brewing Company.
I would come there every day
and cause havoc. But not enough to where they would kick me out and I couldn't come back.
Just so you're unaware.
Just live by our code of conduct, Raj.
Right. Like tons of food that's supposed to go out in like 30 minutes and put everybody to the test. That's what I would do. I would live at Oak Park Brewing Company.
I love that. Yeah.
That's a tough question, though.
It is.
Not for me. I'm going to the brewery.
You literally
I like hanging out at the brewery.
You do, yes.
Yeah, I would be there every day, man, ordering food for people, like tons of food.
That's a good thing.
I wouldn't even eat. I would just be
order
like,
for
hey,
people.
I need 12 of these for this guy and his date. And,
yeah.
You'd be the host. You want to be like, hey, this is my place. You can have whatever.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's my sense of humor.
Yeah. I like it.
Where would I retire? That's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably
just tell us where your wife wants to live. That's what it is.
Our favorite place to go vacation
okay, yeah.
is North Coast, like Trinidad, Eureka, oh, cool. up in that area.
Oh, you like going far north? Up
yeah.
Here. Okay. It's beautiful.
But
up
also,
there.
You know, like we are pretty blessed right now in our lives that we live just south of Sacramento on a pear and apple orchard. And
nice.
Like, I don't ever want to leave it. Like,
yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's like our own vacation spot every day we go home. It's peaceful. It's quiet. It's our own place. And
that's great.
You know, I could easily see myself living there for the rest of my life. So,
and how far is that commute?
It takes me like 20 minutes to get to work.
That's nothing.
No, not
in
at all.
California, 20 minutes is nothing. 2 minutes. That's
yeah.
nothing.
Yeah.
Okay, that's so nice.
On his, I would call him up every day and be like, "Hey Jeff, I'm gonna go to the brewery.
You still haven't been out to our house yet, Rob.
Bring the kids. I'll treat you to lunch, dinner, whatever it is. Beers. Yeah. Come on.
We got some pygmy goats, yeah. some chickens, a dog, and
nice.
Raj calls me the Lager King.
Yeah,
after the Tiger King.
No, he comes in with these.
I got some weird farm stories sometimes.
Like, and I'm like, dude, we need to document this. We'll call it the Lager King.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
You know, so, but no, we have fun.
We
now,
do.
So,
yes.
Well,
know,
let me like, tell you this too. Interesting about the where would you live if you had a bunch of money story. I haven't been doing this segment for all that long, but in the time that I've done it. I don't know if it's a Bay Area thing or a Brewer thing. Most people are living right where they want to live, just like you two. So no one, I don't know that anybody's answered that question yet, like, I'm off to Belize. Fuck you all in the Bay Area. Everyone's kind of like, you know, I really like it here. I would just have more money and stay here, which I think this is a positive thing.
It is. You know?
You know?
I think so.
We're not all just looking over the fence at what's greener.
Can I rephrase that?
Hell yeah.
Okay, I would live somewhere else, okay. but I would always come to Oak Park Brewing Company
there we go.
At 12 o'clock p.m.
Yeah.
When they
7 days a week.
And just order food all day long for anyone who wants it.
But you don't know where your somewhere else is yet.
No, it's like ultimately my parents are getting older, so probably North Carolina or New Mexico.
Okay.
You know, but then there's places I want to go to, like Alaska, Hawaii, Japan, mm-hmm. Africa.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I mean, I think that would be like I would take it from a different mentality, I think, right? Like, hey, I'm going to retire. I don't need a house.
Yeah.
I want to go live wherever I want, right? Travel.
Yeah.
And then wherever my three kids end up, my wife and I would be like, hey, we're going to go visit you for a couple months. We're going to go visit you for a couple months.
Yeah.
And just not necessarily have a home base, right? Just, yeah. but like enjoy. The rest of the world.
I think that's what I would
once.
Do too.
Yeah.
I know a brewer. I'm not going to say any names. I'll try not to give any hints either, but I know a brewer who sold his brewery for what we would all agree is a ridiculous fuck ton of money. And
so how much is a fuck ton?
You tell me.
I don't know. That's why.
Well, a ton is 2,000 pounds.
Yeah, we know that, but a fuck
what
ton.
What is the fuck part of that?
If I give the number, I'll give away the person, and I don't want to do that.
No, okay. It's all good.
What's half of a fuck ton?
It's a fucking fuck ton is how much money. And anyhow.
Two fucks.
This person did a thing that I don't.
Fuck ton.
This person did a thing that I don't even know exists, because apparently you have to have a fuck ton to know that this exists. But this person bought an apartment on a cruise ship that constantly travels the world. It just never stops traveling the world. And it's only apartments, by the way. It's not. We're not talking Royal Caribbean here, where you got to deal with us assholes who come on with our discount. It's all rich people.
With apartments. Wow.
And in this apartment, it's your apartment. Like, when you leave the boat, nobody else lives in your apartment. It's still your apartment. So you just show up, your clothes are all there and everything, and it just travels the world all the time.
Wow.
And he gets on it wherever he wants to get on it. Like, maybe he wants to travel the world for a couple weeks. Maybe he just wants to go back to where he lives. And he probably has five different places he lives, like you're saying.
Yeah.
This one entity that I didn't even know existed. Apparently, there
I've never
are,
even heard of it
there
before,
are cruise ships for rich people where rich people own all the apartments in the cruise ship. That would be pretty dope.
That would be. I've never heard of anything like that.
No,
that
neither
cool.
did I. I was like, how do I not know about this? And this person was like, because
you don't
you're
have a
poor.
Fuck ton of money.
Yeah, question for you, though.
Yeah.
Do they have like housekeeping?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
I'm sure they got
like a hotel
everything.
Where they come in, they clean your room, they stock your fridge, and you're just like, okay.
It's a luxury floating apartment that's constantly circumnavigating the world.
That's, man, amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
And it's things like beer, that we beers included, I'm there.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, like, maybe they need a brewery. I'm just saying, guys. I would think that these rich people need a brewery on their on their cruise ship. Yeah. So maybe that's like the way in. All right, that's all the time we have today. Once again, you can go to opbrewco.com and learn more about Oak Park Brewing. And then you can go, what's the festival website?
So everyone you can go to thepeoplesbeerfestival.com or Eventbrite, search word, the People's Beer Festival.
There you go. And you can get all the information you need about all the cool events starting on the 10th, which is now National Black Brewers Day. Good job. That's really cool. Well, thank you guys for being here today. I appreciate you coming all the way down and sharing your beer. It was wonderful. Maybe we'll have a pint after the show, wrap things up. But you're welcome back anytime, and I hope I get to come up and see you for the event starting on the 10th. Cool.
Thank you, Justin.
Yeah.
Thank you for having us. We appreciate it. And anytime you want us on, we are open to it.
Heck yeah. I'll come do shows at your place, too. You don't always have to come down here. We'll figure it out.
Basement's open if you need it.
There we go.
It's warm. That boiler's kicking. Yeah. It's loud, but it's warm.
All right, don't forget to visit our sponsors, including the 21st Amendment Brewery. Go to 21st-amendment.com. Check out Sean's beer. You can get Hell or High Watermelon there, although I think right now it's Hell or High Mango is their new seasonal. Plus, check out their Pumpkin Haze Hazy IPA beer. That's their seasonal lineup. Great beer and great people who support this program. Thanks to them. We'll be back with more shows soon. I've got a lot coming up, and I'm excited about it. So we're going to have a busy winter of great brewers and brewing information here on the Brewing Network. Thanks for hanging out with us. Take care of yourselves and your beer. The Session is a production of the Brewing Network and brought to you by More Beer. Check them out at morebeer.com. Find more content and live video of this show on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/brewingnetwork. For sponsorship opportunities and information, please reach out to advertising@thebrewingnetwork.com. To reach our hosts, contact feedback@thebrewingnetwork.com.